we collected data of over 330,000 accounts in the US, Instagram accounts, for over a year. We structured an algorithm that would tag abnormal behavior according to how abnormal it is.
Hello everyone, welcome to a new episode of The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory. Today with me, we have Rafael Broschi, that is the CEO and co-founder of Notch. Welcome to the show.
Hey Alessandro, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First of all, how is your week? How did it start? A lot of things going on, or it's quiet? what is it this time?
Always a lot of things going on. So, you know, the offices are in Israel and we cater for the US market. So we basically work 6 days a week and 18 hours a day. That's the usual course of business. A lot of things are happening.
I feel it. And we will go more in details about what does it mean to run a company, right? Still a lot of people that are haven't started, you know, like a company ever, or they just like look up maybe video online, they still have an idea that it's just easy. And, you know, if you want to make it, you know, but there is so much more, right, behind the scene of especially something like your industry that we'll go more in detail right now. That is different from maybe other guests we had in the past that were mostly like more platform that were, you know, approaching maybe blue ocean markets. While in your case, it's an industry that I've been there for a long time and it is maybe different, right, to either disrupt or just like to approach in different ways. So first of all, can you tell me a bit more about yourself, your background, and how did you get like in finding yourself in like, you know what, let's create Notch?
Sure. So I used to work in a startup, then in the hedge fund industry. While I did my MBA, I got exposed to Ben Graham, which is Warren Buffett's mentor, read a few books, really started to make sense of this whole investing universe, started working at a hedge fund. And a few months later, I already knew that I want to do something else. Hedge fund is a very interesting industry, but at the end of the day, when you work at a hedge fund, your product is your P&L each day. How much money you made, how much money you lost. Now, of course, we're not day traders. We're trading for the long term. But at the end of the day, at least where I worked, it was kind of a zero-sum game where when you win a trade, someone else loses a trade. And we were very passive investors. So I wanted to build something. And around June 2020, when COVID just started, I quit and I wanted to build something of my own, started playing games again because I was a gamer my entire life. And noticed that a lot of people are losing their accounts and there are basically black markets out there where you could trade accounts that you hacked or your own accounts for money. And it's a very big industry. And then me and a few friends of mine that all did other things in the startup industry said that it's an interesting problem. We started researching it. There wasn't any eureka moment to say, yeah, that's what we want to do. We said, okay, that's interesting. People are losing their digital assets. Around that time, there was a small Israeli insurance company that got hacked and they said they're not paying the ransom because they have cyber insurance. Of course, we didn't really understand what it means outside what the normal person knows of cyber insurance. We're researching more and more, and we said, what would happen if this happens to one of us, a consumer or a very, very small business? And basically, that's where we decided that that's what we want to do. That's the problem we want to handle, which means that we want to build insurance products and somewhat of a protection suite for digital assets. And we decided to start with social media accounts.
It makes sense. And, you know, like on a note of something that you said earlier, some people might not know, but it's actually interesting that, as you said before, there are marketplaces, right, on sort of like, you know, the dark web, right, that resell hacked accounts. So anytime that you see maybe, you know, like some accounts have like a lot of followers, but they change rapidly, maybe content, for example, most probably was hacked, was sold on the black market, right, for a certain amount of money, depending on different factors. And that happens on a daily basis, right? From smaller accounts to bigger accounts on every type of social media. So and again, you know, I know that some people don't even know about this, but it's a big problem, right? So you said that you started because of that and because you wanted to understand the typical, like, you know, again, you know, not the company, right? That sometimes already have some of these insurance in place, but the common people, right? They might have their own accounts just for fun, or in this case, most probably, I guess, for content creators, right? So, can you tell me a bit more about what was the first days in creating like Notch, right? So we said it's an insurance for your digital asset, and insurance is a traditional, I would say, industry, right? Something that have been there for a long time, and usually it's just the, you know, the a few names, right, in the industry. So what was the approach from the beginning in something that is so, again, so might be difficult, right, to enter?
Yeah, that was interesting. So whenever you start a new insurtech company, the main problem is how do you get a product to market? Mm-hmm. Because you need to find a traditional partner to help you get it to market. At the end of the day, you don't have insurance licenses and insurance carriers licenses, which means you have to have someone's paper to write the product on. And usually this process takes 18, 24 months because you're talking to a traditional company, you're bringing your product to market. They have to understand if they want to put the resources in place to get the product to market, etc. So what we said, okay, before we approach those traditional companies, and we know it's going to take long, we understood that the problem was that if you approach them too early, what happens is they might say, that's a great idea. Circle back to us in 3-4 months. That's a Q2 23 thing. That's what a lot of them told us. So we decided to come as prepared as possible before approaching those traditional insurance, which means that we've basically developed the entire insurance product before we came to them. And then we had a lot to present. It wasn't just an idea. It was, that's the idea. That's the actuarial modeling we've done. So those are the statistics. That's the model. That's how we built it. That's how much we want to price it. That's how the policy is going to be written. Now, of course, once we found our partner, Hartford Steam Boiler, we've went through a ton of iterations on the product and changes. But I would say it was good enough to really show them that we've done a lot of work and a lot of the due diligence has already been done because of the companies we worked with by creating the product and the work we've done. But it's a very tough and rigorous process. We've spoken to, I would say, 20 different carriers. Two said that they want to go with us, and we chose one of them at the end of the day.
And so since it's so, again, you know, tough and complicated, what worked so far could be, you know, like either in the marketing department or any other like, you know, departments that you're running now. So anything that worked so far that you would like give as a piece of advice or like, I don't know, like for any other people like going into this, because as you said, it's like it's niche and complicated, but maybe something that people could use, right, as just an idea, suggestions for also something else they are building. And what is the scrappiest thing that you have to do so far in your business? Like, you know, some people are like sleeping in the office, some others, like what is your, the thing that was like, you realized that at the time was like, maybe
hey,
really tough
quick
to do,
break.
But was,
this podcast was is cheaper. Hosted by the Influencer Marketing Factory. We are an influencer marketing agency that helps brands and companies engage with Gen Z and millennials on social media. We take care of influencer identification, storytelling, creativity, negotiation, contracting, campaign management, ROI analysis, in-depth reporting, content boosting, and much, much more. Are you interested in learning more? You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or you can Google The Influencer Marketing Factory.
Yeah, so let's talk about something that has worked well. Let's talk about the actuarial modeling piece. So when you build a new insurance product, a lot of people say, hey, I'm outsourcing it to someone else because building an insurance product is complicated. Now, the basics of an insurance product is not complicated. You need to know two things. What is the frequency of something happening, the event you want to insure against? Let's say someone breaking their hand in a soccer game, a soccer player breaking their hand. And the other is, what's the severity? So if that person breaks their hand, how much would I have to pay as the insurance company. So to do that, I think we really broke down what is an insurance product and really thought through on what we need to do to build that kind of modeling. And what we did was we collected data of over 330,000 accounts in the US, Instagram accounts, for over a year. Then we structured an algorithm that would tag abnormal behavior according to how abnormal it is. So for example, if you see an account name change, you might say, hey, that's suspicious. But then you see that around 1 in 4 accounts change your name every year or two. So you have to find a lot of those signals that might count as suspicious. Once we collect the data, we ran all of the data from those accounts through an algorithm over and over and over again. Then we had a team of 8 analysts tagging over 4,000 accounts for over a year. So it's a very, very long process. But I think that is something that I'm really proud of, that we launched a new insurance product with very, very granular and I would say accurate data, according to what we've seen, and not just by saying, hey, let's launch it and see what happens.
Also because it's really specific, right? You need something for Instagram now, then later on you need something for TikTok, exactly. Something else for YouTube, right? You want to be exactly. Sure that what you're presenting makes the data, right?
For your second question, the scrappiest thing, something that I would never think I would do. So at the beginning, we were 3 people trying to tag those 4,000 accounts, right? The 3 founders, and we need to build a company and we need to tag 4,000 accounts a week. So we each spend around 6 hours a day just tagging accounts. And it's not an easy job. Okay, it's very rigorous and it's not very fun. That's one. Now what I'm doing is something I never thought of. I'm generating content for our Instagram account and YouTube and TikTok, because I think that in 2022, if you want to build a good direct-to-consumer brand, that's the best way to do it profitably. You have to create good content. You have to give value to your audience. And by that, you'll be able to sell the product more. But I hated being on camera. I still don't love it, but it's a necessity. And slowly but surely, I'm getting a bit better in it. Not good, far from good. But this is something I never thought I would do, at least not on a regular basis. And today I film between 1 and 2 reels a day. I edit them. I do everything myself. And it's just the only way to get started, right? People think that once you build a startup and you raise money, then you have a team of 80 people. But very fast, you understand that smaller is better. It's much more nimble, much more agile. And you have so many things that you're changing all the time in a startup. Like you think you would start this way and you end up 180 degrees. You have to keep the team small, which means that every person does a ton of things outside of their, you know, scope of work. But there isn't such a thing in a startup, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you said about you being the CEO, a co-founder of the company, you know, those memes like reality, yeah. You know, like expectation and reality, you know, you see yourself like commanding from these, you know, these skyscraper looking down, you know, on people. And then actually it's you for 6 hours, right? Tagging. And I feel that like everyone that, you know, started a startup, you know, that you have different hats in your head. And as you said, a role doesn't really define really your task, right? You are going to have to do everything. And I felt it when you said, I know the feeling of having like your eyes mostly start crossing after a few hours on a spreadsheet doing the same over and over. But I appreciate that you're getting also in the content creation, because especially like also like sales and platforms and so on, everyone is realizing that you need an audience, you need a community, that are 2 different things. And we talk about this in one of our preview episodes on the podcast. And also, you need content creation. And if it comes from one of the founders, that really gives that, I would say, bridge, right, between you and the others. So they don't just see you as a solution, but, you know, as a platform, but actually someone that they can trust. So I'm happy to hear that you get into that. And I'm pretty sure going to get better day by day, because even myself, I started doing this as a test. I was like, you know, I can see that traction, right? And all the time from the first episode now getting a bit better, right? So and so you started like from scratch, we said that. So and now instead you got 7 million on investment, right? Okay. So first of all, congratulations on that. And that came from both VC but also content creators. And we also talk about this in one of our episode about content creators becoming entrepreneurs or investors. So can you tell me a bit more about the process there also? Like, is it like getting also money from content creators, is it like the same as VC? Are there different rules, different expectation? What can they bring in? I guess also experience apart from the money, right? So how does it work now with this new money getting in the company?
Sure. First of all, I would say they are much harder to get in touch with than traditional VCs, because a traditional VC has one job, invest in companies. Of course, they need to manage them, et cetera, but they're open to new opportunities. They have people on the team just scouring the web for new opportunities. That's what they do. So it is very, very reasonable that if you have an okay story, you'll be able to get a meeting with almost any VC in the world. Sequoia or whatever it is, almost always. With content creators, when they're big, this is just not the case. When you talk about a content creator that has 10, 20, 30, 40 million followers, they manage a team of 20, 30, 50, 100 people. Their main job is not to invest, it's to create content and create value for their audience. They sometimes invest on the side, and then you see a more structured way of doing it. Sometimes those creators start funds. We've seen them, but most of the creators are creators and they invest a bit. So it is much harder to get an audience. And the only way that I could have done it is through my investors. Now, I'm sure there are other ways, but it's incredibly tough. Second, I would say that the vision is also different. It's closer to an angel investor. Okay, as a VC, if you invest in seed stage, you invest in 50 companies, you know the statistics. It's not your first fund usually. You know that out of those 50, 25 are going to go bankrupt, and 3-4 might succeed. As a creator, not all creators have 50 different investments. So the bar is higher. And you can't only plan the story that this is going to be a $1 billion company in 7 to 10 years. And it's also a different story between angel investors and funds. And the last piece is, at the end of the day, usually you want to take money from those content creators is because you see there is an added value here, because you understand that they could put you in touch with a lot of people, they could help with distribution, or they could provide the trust you need. But it is also important to remember that if a content creator with 10 million followers or 50 million followers puts in $50,000 or $100,000 in your company, $50,000 or $100,000 is a lot for me, but that might be, you know, one reel that the person uploads for a big brand. So you also have to understand that if you expect a lot from those content creators in terms of what they would do to promote your company, the check size has to be one that matters to them, and what you're offering should matter. Plus, your offering should align really well with what they do. Because if I sell insurance and I get a content creator that only markets cosmetics and she has a cosmetic brand, she might be able to help a bit, but she won't be able to promote me that much to her audience, because at the end of the day, what she or he cares about most is being authentic to their audience and growing their audience. That's how they make money. That's their entire living. So I think that's important to remember.
Totally. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, like, you want to look at the short term, medium and long term, right? Certain content creators, especially in the past, I think they didn't think twice about doing certain collaboration. And then, you know, like, they were like, actually, I didn't maybe like, you know, I didn't evaluated properly things. And also the company maybe was like, maybe we did it in a rush. So I think that especially nowadays, you want to look both sides, and they have to make sense again, especially in the long term, because every day there is a new collaboration out, there is a new product. And as you said before, only a few are going to survive, right? In the startup ecosystem, every day there is something new. A lot of them, they maybe last 1 year, some of them even less than that, right? And only the ones that have a clear path, right, can stay longer. So how are you now investing and spending this money? Is it mostly product, like in dev? Is it marketing? Is it collaboration with other influencers? Are you splitting them even, or are you mostly looking for something as a priority right now?
I would say in any startup, most of the budget goes towards salaries. That's just the way it is, especially when you build the product. I would say that still 60-70% of our budget goes towards salaries, and most of the rest towards marketing in different channels.
Okay, makes sense. And can you tell us also a bit more about the business model? Because again, we said before, we mostly cover Instagram, and that is
and
what
YouTube.
You offer
we,
right
we
now,
just
right?
launched
so
YouTube.
I know that and YouTube also.
Thank you.
Amazing. Congratulations on that. So we have Instagram and YouTube. And going back a bit, like, you know, earlier, what we said about, like, what is Notch? Can you tell me a bit more what is a typical process and also the business model behind your subscription, that I guess it is what it is, right? Sort of monthly subscription in a way. But tell us more.
Sure. So let's start with the second question. The business model, like any other insurance, we get paid a premium to cover a potential future risk. And if that risk happens, then we give something back. That something is according to the policy coverage. In our case, it could be between $5,000 to $100,000 paid on a daily basis. What do we cover? We cover social media accounts against account takeover, so hacks. And the way that the product works is if you get hacked, you'll be paid on a daily basis for up to 90 days, or until we manage to help you get access back to your account. Now, even though we never guarantee and we're not able to guarantee we'll be able to get access, we will do our best efforts towards getting the account back. And that's why we structured a reimbursement structure in a way that would align our interests with our policyholders. That's why we pay on a daily basis and not 3 months later, like a traditional insurance company. In terms of how you sign up with the process, it's probably the fastest insurance product to get in the world. Takes 7 clicks getting to the quote, takes literally 60 seconds. Most people complete the purchase between 2.5 and 4 minutes. And most of the time just spent on the pricing page to play around with the coverage, to see what actually is covered, what isn't covered. And we try not to have any small prints. So we put it on the page, what's covered, what's not covered. And of course, we advise each of our policyholders to read our policy. We wrote it in the simplest way possible, but it is still an insurance product, so it's not a one-sheet document.
Yeah, I like also that you shared about, you know, the time that was spent, because usually it's more complex than that, so that you were able actually to, like, find everything. And I guess you guys started all the funnel that was there step by step, analyze, you know, like if you did it before with so many thousand of, you know, accounts and breaking down, I'm pretty sure that also on the side, like of the customer being on your website, I'm pretty sure that you analyze everything, right, that is happening in order to optimize things. And that's something that I think a lot of times still startups, they don't look at, right? They do something, they don't analyze what is happening. While it is so important to understand if people are liking it, are they converting? Where are they stopping, right? What is the step that are maybe, you know, abandoning the cart in a way, right? That is all analysis that you should do, I would say, on a daily basis. And also something that I was interested in knowing from you, since you have like so much data, and we said before that a lot of people get hacked on a daily basis. A lot of them, they, you know, are not able to restore. Others, they are. And others, like, they just don't even know that this is something that happens, right? Can you share with me a bit, maybe any statistics that you found out during your search? Could be either about, you know, people getting hacked, or how much does it take to get, like, something restored? Like, any numbers that either shocked you that you didn't expect, or something that you were expecting that, but they were still solid, a solid part of your search to go to investors, for example?
Yeah, so taking our research and assuming that it applies worldwide, we expect that there are between 20 and 30,000 Instagram accounts getting hacked per day in general. Now, if you're a creator, because the number of creators is much smaller, there are around 200 creators a day that get hacked in the US. Every day, 200 creators. And when I say creator, I mean accounts with over 10,000 followers. So the accounts that mostly get targeted, although it's very widespread, but it's mostly between the 5,000 range and a few hundreds of thousands of followers. That's the most. And why not lower than that? Because first of all, it's much easier to get a list of emails from different platforms for the larger accounts. They don't follow the smaller accounts. Second, if you do manage to take over an account with 20,000 followers, as the hacker, you are much more likely to get something out of it, which means if you hack an account with 24 followers, you probably won't get paid the ransom you request, even if you request for $100. But if you hack an account that has 20,000 followers, and that's an account for that is owned by a small business owner, and that small business owner can't sell anything because you took over their social media account, then if the price is not too much, they might pay ransom. And I think that's something that people don't talk about. A lot of ordinary people, people like you and me, not from the insurance industry, think that no one ever pays ransom, but it's not the case. Paying ransom, at the end of the day, is a business decision. You have to go through rigorous compliance processes if you do it. It's not that I recommend for every private person to do it. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that sometimes paying ransom in terms of a business decision could be better than waiting for your account to go back. We see the average time to get an account back stands at between 70 and 75 days, which is a very long time. That's from over 2,000 accounts that we've seen getting hacked. And once they were hacked, we started following those accounts to understand how long it took to get them back. So that's a long time.
That's crazy. I mean, that means like, if you schedule brand deals, it's really gonna like, you know, be a big problem. And even if you don't have a brand deals, just like the anxiety, right? I guess of not having access to your own account, that psychologically also part of like, you know, on the terms of like business side, but also psychologically might be quite hard on people, right? So.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people, when I talk about insurance for social media, their mind goes directly to influencers. Mm-hmm. They make money by brand deals, but there's 10 times as that the amount of small businesses that aren't influencers. They make money just by selling their own product, and they use social media as a means for exposing themselves for other clients. If they get hacked, they're also in a big problem, right? So people think about influencers. Definitely, if you're an influencer and your main platform is Instagram and Instagram gets hacked, you're going to be in a lot of problems. But if you're a small business owner and you have 20,000 followers and 90% of your leads get to you through Instagram and they buy on the website, it's the same thing. And if someone takes over your social media account, so you still have a website. So what? Who's going to visit it?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Also, because every time I receive like emails from maybe my bank or others, like, you know, services around there and, you know, organization, they say that more and more like, you know, small businesses are attacked, right, by hackers these days. So, you know, before I think it was only like the, you know, the big corporations that were like, you know, target of that. But nowadays, a lot of even more smaller businesses, because might be a bit easier sometimes, right? And if you put them together, I don't want to say they're going to collect potentially the same amount, you know, as a big corporation, but might be just a bit faster also to for some hackers. So absolutely, that is an interesting point there. And is there anything else also like in terms of now that you're building the company, anything that you are proud of that only you offer, for example, or something that you built that you're like, we really love this part of our like offering or service, and that we want to really like, you know, give a shout out to?
Yeah, so I would say two things. One is the ease of use of the system and the ease of use of getting paid or what happens if you get hacked. And second, I would say is the full suite of services. So people usually say, okay, so what's your secret sauce? Is it the insurance policy? And I always say, no. Once we file the insurance policy, it's out there for everyone to see. Tomorrow morning, a big insurance company could say, you know what, we want to do it. It might take them a few months, but they could launch a similar product. But I think our additional services, the level of support we're giving, the 24/7 support through the platform where everyone uses, through Instagram or whatever platform it is, the fact that we respond lightning fast and and I'm not just saying it, it is fast, that we help people with all kinds of problems, right? Even if it's not specifically a part of the insurance, we help them get through it, even if it's not a covered event. And the expertise in the platform, I think that's the main thing that is considered a competitive advantage or something that I'm proud of, and it's and is extremely hard to replicate, because building an algorithm or building a technological system is hard. But if it took us a year and a few million dollars, there are much smarter people than me and out there. A lot of people could do it. But I think gaining the expertise, talking to the people, really understanding the problems, how to solve them, having answers to the questions, creating content around them, and catering to those specific needs is the really hard part to do.
Yeah, I can see that the education side, it's quite important, right? A lot of people are not educated enough about this, right? Either because they are not that tech savvy on one side, or the other, maybe they just like don't realize how big could be the problem, right? So sometimes it's about educating the people, having them to understand things, and then, you know, make decisions on that. So I think that on that, it's a really good point that you got into. And last question for you before we go to a super quick, you know, Q&A with you. But what is then the future of your industry? How do you see it in the next year, 3 years, 5 years, and then 10 years, right? I know that with influencers and content creators and small brands, it's difficult to say. But if you had a vision of it, of both your company and also the industry, what would it be?
So for the industry, I think that 5 years from now, there will not be any small business that is being built, a business which isn't local in nature. There will not be any small business that wants to sell products that aren't local in nature, that will not rely on social media to bring in people. We spend more and more time online. More and more of our purchasing decisions are done according to what we see in social media. According to research, almost 50% of all retail decisions or all retail purchases start by someone seeing a product on social media. So 5 years from now, I think that's only going to amplify. Looking at social commerce, I think that's the next evolution of e-commerce, meaning e-commerce through social media. Because what happens now is basically you see it on social media and then you move to the website. There is no reason for it not to happen on the platform, and it is happening in Asia, for example. So I think that's one. And more businesses will rely on digital assets. The website itself, or I would say the tangible store itself, would become less significant. It will always carry a part, but everything will be pivoted more towards the social commerce part. For us, we want to have a solution for every digital asset out there. And we want the solution to be holistic, not to tell you like we're doing now, hey, insurance for Instagram account, insurance for YouTube account. I want to cover everything in the digital identity of the business and provide a full suite of services. I think there are a lot of companies that provide insurance, a lot of companies that provide protection. But I think the real suite of protection or security here is a combination of all of those things. You need prevention, which is the protection aspect. You need insurance if something happens, and you need crisis management to know what you would do if something happens. So that's where we want to be.
It makes sense. I mean, if we look at the books of business nowadays, they're still under asset. It's mostly physical assets, right? So anytime there is like an exercise to do, it's about your store, your storage, right? And your office. But yeah, there is not so much, usually about digital assets. So I it's much needed, right? I do believe that also in the, whenever you start starting these type of things, you should look at the digital asset that's starting to get more important, especially with remote work and so on. So I totally agree on that vision. And I'm going to ask you in 5 minutes, okay, to wrap up, something that just feel free to, even just like a word as an answer could be, okay? So it just, this is about you, okay? I want to learn a bit more about you as a person. So I'm just going to ask you, okay, a few questions here and there. Let's start with this. Do you spend more time on Instagram or on YouTube?
Instagram.
If you were a superhero, which superpower you would love to have?
Like to be Superman, like everyone, I think.
Are you more for books or movies?
Books.
And so which is the favorite books of yours?
Science fiction. Yeah.
Do you have a title or specific?
Foundation by Isaac Asimov. Yeah.
That's a classic. Love it. I also was a big fan when I was like in middle school of that. And tomorrow you win 10 million cash at the lottery. So you can do whatever you want. What is the first thing that you buy?
First thing that I buy? A better microphone for podcasts.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, that there are really cheap options right now, so you can do it also right away, I think. Yeah, I love it in the idea of the content creation, so I love it for that. What is your favorite food? I love
pizza. I'm gonna be very generic. Yeah,
I love that answer. Let's go with that. You know, being Italian, I love when someone says pizza. And what is your favorite drink? Could be anything that you like, alcohol, non-alcohol, whatever you like. What is the drink to go?
Rum, Zacapa.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Oh, good one. And last two. I mean, you said before already, maybe, but between breathing underwater or flying.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you said it before with Superman. And last one, book smart or street smart?
Street smart.
Nice. All the time that I ask entrepreneurs, usually street smart. So I can see a pattern there, right? Usually. Amazing. Well, Rafael, thank you so much for joining me today. I think this is really an interesting industry, something new, right? Something that, as you said, it might be complex, but much needed in the future, but already in the present for many, many people, right? So you shared a lot of info. So thank you so much for that. And for everyone else, this was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.